Blog Talk Radio.
But I'm cool like that. 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 I'm cool.
Queen be the chocolate tap to my rap. She innovates after sweet a cat nap. He at the funk club with the vibrate. Them they be crazy down with the five mix. It can kick a plan than a crowd burst. Me, I be digging it with the bug first. Us, we be freaking till dawn, peace and I. He gets to change his smile, so I say hi.
Welcome to the Goon Squad Sports Radio Podcast. It is I, Puma, along with Black Thor and Ice Water. Make sure you check out our YouTube channel. First 40. If you want to get Ice and Black mad, just mention The Last Dance with Michael Jordan. That's all I got to say. Must see TV. How you doing, Black?
I'm doing well, man. You know, it's kind of commonplace when I get mad, but when Ice get mad, man, that's something special, bro. When Ice let it loose, yeah, baby.
Hey, how you doing, Ice?
I'm all know now. Damn, I think you was coming on the show this week. Might let y'all have it after the way you speak to me that way.
So I will be crossing out that subject on the list for next week. Unless I want to make these guys hot and bothered under the collar. But check out our show, The First 40, on the Goon Squad podcast, our channel on YouTube. We're going to be talking to Donald Boone. He's an offensive tackle out of Chauwin University. I hope I'm saying that right. The Chauwin University Braves offensive lineman going into the draft this Thursday. Looking up some of his stats, this brother is 6'5", 210 pounds. I'm going to call him Sir for the show when he gets on. But before he gets on, Black, any overlapping subjects on the first 40 you want to bring into this show?
No, I can't talk about the Jordan thing because I didn't watch that, but I will throw up the fact that we talked a little bit about what's-his-name selling his home, man. Anthony Davis put his home up for sale and what that mean, man. Anytime you see an athlete basically throw the home up for sale, you can kind of assume that he's looking to move on through. So, as I stated before, I didn't think he was going to be there long. I know Ice was thinking that LeBron might be selling down. I don't think – where LeBron is playing, I'll give him credit. In the 17-year the way he's balling, I don't think he's ready to stop playing. Whether Davis there or not, LeBron's going to try to find someone, recruit someone, maybe even get his son if he can to play with him next year. So LeBron is not ready to retire.
All right, so any overlapping topics you want to mention on this show?
No, I think that kind of worked. Maybe just the fact that we talked about the way that the WNBA draft was treated.
as far as the league is concerned, it kind of goes on the standpoint of you think they're getting a step forward by the new contract, and then when things come out like this, the way that the draft was seen and presented, it just kind of reminds you that you should not get too comfortable and think you made that much progress, because certain groups have certain ways to kind of still show them who the top dogs are, unfortunately.
Yes, I'm looking at some of the WNBA changes, and they're bumping up the salaries. So I'm trying to even wonder, are they even going to get these salaries with this pandemic happening? And it doesn't seem like a lot of buzz with the WNBA. Like I said, I was watching the draft. First of all, I'd like to say congratulations to all the ladies with their hard work and getting drafted by the teams. But I think that ESPN should have did a better job of presenting this, pumping this up, the way they're doing the NFL draft, things of that sort. And I think either Black or I said it's a disservice to them. It's a disservice to them. We don't know if they're even going to get on the court this year. But the production, if the NFL draft is anywhere like this, then we're in some boring TV. Get your drinks and all your libations together and try to sit that one out. Speaking of the NFL draft, Ice, your expectations from the NFL draft, man. Who makes moves and why?
Well, you mentioned earlier when we talked on the 40 that teams that really need to make hardcore decisions are the ones that really need to make moves and move up. And that when it comes down to those quarterbacks, there are a few out there. The whole thing is Tua, really, when you think about it. Tua, Miami's talking about reaching for him, but I think a lot of people are really scared to go after him because of the factor that it's an unknown. And I appreciate what he's done. I appreciate the work he put in. But take from somebody who had hip surgery, man. You one play away, bro. You one play away from that thing turning around on you. And I hope he does well. But I think you're going to have a lot more skeptics out there than most in that regard. And I think the other thing, too, I'll say very quickly is I think a lot of people would believe that Washington might make a move and get out of that position. But from after they're really understanding and doing their real work on Chase Young, they would be crazy to get out of that. Because he's a player, and I know he was a little bit double-teamed after he came back from suspension and whatnot, but he can make it happen, and he can be a great playmaker for them, and they need as many bodies and weapons that they can put on both sides of the ball in order for them to evolve, and I think Ron Rivera knows that. So it's nothing like having a solid defensive guy that he had for years in Carolina to have the same type of thing in Washington.
The way the Washington team has done the draft in the last few years with Snyder as the owner, I wouldn't put it past them to give up that pick and try to get a lot of other picks. But this is a once in a lifetime player that if they give up on, I think they'll be kicking themselves for the eternity with this guy. Young is a beast at defense, and he's one of those players that can single-handedly, like a Khalil Mack, turn around a game. So if they do that, I'd be very surprised. Black, I'm going to turn you over to our guest, Donald Boone. Mr. Boone, I'm going to call you sir on the show because you're 6'5", 310 pounds, and anybody that big, I call sir. How you doing? Welcome to the Goon Squad.
I'm doing well. How are you?
Great, great, great. I'm going to turn you over to our host, Black Thor.
Yeah, I'm going to echo that myself, man. I'm going to call this young man sir a couple of times because we don't want no problem. We don't want no smoke, my brother. How you feeling, Donald Boone?
Feeling great. How are you?
Good. I want to thank you for joining us, man. As you can tell already, man, we cut up a little bit up here, so feel relaxed. Cut up if you want to,
yeah.
Man. You're at home, my brother. You're at home. This is what we do on a weekly basis. We get together, and we kind of go through sports from our perspective, man. So I want to welcome you on. And I want to start off the bat, brother, just saying, looking at your bio, man. I mean, if no one has a chance, please go and Google this young brother and look at his bio. I mean, the list is long, man. It's absolutely – it's just top to bottom. My mouth is open, man. My first question to you is, how did you start playing offensive lineman? Who guided you in that direction?
Honestly, it was just the first position that I was introduced because I was the biggest kid on the team. So either I played quarterback or lineman, right? But my grandfather played left tackle when he was in college and all that stuff. And ever since when I was little, that's something that he always teach me and whatnot and introduce me to it. And ever since then, that's when I continue to play. I love it, you know.
That's cool because a lot of times, as you said about quarterbacks, most players want to play running back. They want to play that deeper position. They don't want to get down there and get dirty and do the grind. So, cool to see your grandpa for pushing you in that direction. So what age did you actually pick up and started playing football?
I actually started playing football when I was in eighth grade. Really, that's like one of the first time me playing ball ever. This is when we first moved to Georgia. And Billy White Shoes, I don't know if you guys know him or whatnot. He played in the NFL with the Oilers. And he came up to the middle school and he introduced himself and whatnot. And he said, hey, like, you're just too big not to play football. And then he just said, hey, like, you come out, come play with us. And that's what I did. And, I mean, I don't regret it, not one bit, so.
Wow, Billy White, who's here, man. We remember that cat. He had the dance, bro. I mean, it's funny how now the NFL went away from dancing, but no one goes back to Billy White to realize that's where it kind of started, man. With those legs bouncing back and forth. Absolutely,
yeah.
Billy White. you're taking us way back, man, way back.
Yeah.
You went way back with that one. Now, in college, basically, your first year in college, I know high school football could be a little different. Your first year when you got to college, your freshman year, and you started playing, what were some of the things that you see progress from your freshman year onto your senior year as you played?
Most of my freshman year, I would say I was more energetic, lighter. Came in weighing at 250 pounds. Now, my senior year, weighing like 310. So I packed on a lot of weight, especially in a short period of time. But definitely my playing style, I'd probably say got more aggressive, got more physical, and that came along when I got stronger and more comfortable at that next level. So I definitely see my technique improve and all that stuff, and I still overall became a better player throughout the years in my collegiate career.
Here's a question that I just thought of when I was listening to you. It seemed like sometimes when you look at the defensive tackle, they play with an edge, a little anger, and sometimes it seems like the offensive line, some of them don't tend to match that. Sometimes you have to kind of play a little angry to play offensive lineman?
Yes, I think so. Because in the day, you have to be nasty. You know, you have to be able to protect your quarterback and create holes for your running back to go through. And if the D lineman is more nasty than you, then you're not going to get your job done at the end of the day. So being nasty, you know, it also pretty much stands out there on the field, you know, because, you know, you see offensive linemen just pancake a guy back to back over and over, toss some guy around. You know, people's going to notice that.
Absolutely. Yeah, when you said pancake, the first player I thought of was, can't think of his name, but I could see him. He went to the Hall of Fame not too long ago. He played for the Rams, the big brother. I can't think of his name, but he was known for his pancakes. Speaking of which, were there offensive linemen that you kind of maybe looked at as you were coming up and were impressed with and maybe took a little bit from their game, their package?
Most definitely. Trent Williams for the Washington Redskins. I just love his style, his aggression. He kind of reminded me of myself when I play a little bit, and just him being agile and being able to get out and open, create blocks and all that stuff, and just him just being that nasty offensive lineman, and that's something I look up to. And there's times it's 12 o'clock in the morning, I'm watching Trent Williams, you know, his highlights and thinking of his things, things that he do. it's something that I can add to my my toolbox.
Okay. I'm going to say this to you, bro. We're kind of living through you, man, because all three of us lived a life when we were younger. At some point, we wanted to have the opportunity to go to the NFL. I know I can speak for myself. I know Pullman, I'm sure Icewater probably say the same thing. And it's like so many kids, we wake up when we're younger, we go in our backyard, we toss a football, and our dream is to be, you know, one day on that grand stage. You have an opportunity to make that happen. How have you been feeling for the past couple of weeks as the draft starts to get closer and closer?
Excited, but I'm anxious. But, you know, same thing my dad is telling me, just take a day at a time and just continue to work out, grind, and improve, and what's meant to be will be.
Good advice. Now, what's the plan for tomorrow? I know the draft is 3 days long. What's the plan for tomorrow, basically, as you plan to watch the draft? What do you have planned, if you don't mind us asking?
Right now, it's just sitting at home, relaxing, and watching it. I'm not really doing too much of anything. I got to stay ready if the phone call does come tomorrow, Friday or Saturday. So I'm trying to make sure I'm in a place to where I can be able to receive that call and be attentive at the same time. So,
hey, man, we'll be looking for your name to pop up there, bro. No matter which day, we're gonna be right there, front and center, paying attention. Pullman, if you and Ice have a question, man, feel free.
Yeah, I was wondering from your standpoint, and this is Puma, what in college did you do, or how did coaches prepare you to step to the next level?
I say most likely training. So after my season, we went straight ahead and start training for the next level. Plus January, I had a Senior Bowl up in Virginia. So I was also preparing for that also. So at the same time, we prepared for two different things, but it was doing the same time pretty much. But we was working out, increasing the strength, working on techniques, stuff like that. Going back and watching film of things that we can improve on from an athlete perspective, and just trying to get better, really. So.
Question for you.
No, I know. Not
supposed to. I'm sorry, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Oh, one more question. I know I'm not supposed to ask you, so if you can't answer, don't answer. But I won't ask you what teams asked you or have contacted you, but how many teams in the NFL have reached out to you? Because in the NFL, you know, you hear about the glamour spots, the quarterback, the running back, the receivers, and sometimes on the defense, but we rarely hear about what I call the backbone or foundation of a team, the offensive line. And there are teams that probably won't admit it, but they need offensive linemen to protect some of these flashy quarterbacks out there. So how many teams have outreached to you? Because I'm looking at my Giants and Pittsburgh Steelers. They need a 310-pound 6'5" brother. But you'll have to yeah. mention them. How many teams have reached out to you and say, hey, we're interested?
Yeah, most definitely I'm not going into details about the teams, but probably about a total of 6 teams.
Okay.
Cool, man. Cool. Yeah, man, if the Giants do call, man, give them a little special consideration because we need you, bro. Ice, you have a question for Donald Moon, Icewater.
Yeah, Mr. Boone, I'm going to call you Mr. Boone, too. I'm going to follow protocol, but I'm a little different. So I'm Icewater, but I promise I'll respect you because I got love for big fellas that really can make things happen on the football field. I do
that in double A.
No doubt. When you look at it from this standpoint, offensive line is one of the positions that it's not about what school you went to. It's about putting work in on the field. And you hear running backs talk all the time about the big fellas up front getting it done, and that's why they win. So hearing that and knowing that situations where guys like Larry Little came from Bethune-Cookman, undrafted free agent, but is a Hall of Famer, and Art Shell, who went to Maryland Eastern Shore and really is one of the greatest offensive linemen of all time. When you hear that type of thing, how excited are you about this opportunity that might come, that will come your way in the next couple of days?
I'm super excited. I'm just super excited. I don't know what to say. I'm just so excited. Feel a bunch of joy and all that stuff. And when that time comes, you know, I'm most definitely take advantage of it. And today, I always need the opportunity.
And I appreciate that too. Also, very quickly, when you to get to another the next level, you have to work and put hard work in. You already know that, but then also you have to connect with people that perhaps have been there. And kind of talk about going to the Willie Anderson Lineman Academy. When I saw that tape, and I was like, "Ooh, he working out with Willie Anderson. He getting ready." So yeah. We'll talk about that a little bit, if you will.
Willie Anderson, he's a great guy. I love him. He knows what he's talking about. And just having that connect, I mean, it's something special because I can take what he learned and what he did in the past also and bring it to my game. And just the whole atmosphere when we train, it's different. It's one of the best atmosphere that I have when I train. But you know, his workouts are great, phenomenal. And like I said, he knows what he's talking about. And if anybody does go there, you know, most definitely listen to him and take what he got to say.
Last question for me. I know I asked you how excited you were, but I want to know what is that? How motivated? How motivated are you to show off your skills on the next level? You get all these guys going to be coming from Alabama, Ohio State, all kind of different places. But when you know you're ready and you can show your skill set, how motivated are you to have that opportunity?
I'm highly motivated. Come from a small school, you know, you kind of look down upon. You know, most scouts and recruits and all stuff looking at the major D1s because the talent, I guess, is better there. But you know, come from a small school, you know, once you get there, you got to produce. And you know, I see that as an opportunity and something to be motivated about to sit in and say, hey, you can play at any level as long as you can play ball and do what you need to do and have great technique and energetic to play, you'll be fine.
Great answer.
I don't think there's no one better in this draft than you, bro. And keep that mindset going, and you're going to do well, man. You're going to do well. I don't think there's no one better. And I want to thank you for spending some time with us the night before. I can't imagine how you're feeling, what you're going through, to give us some moments. I really appreciate it, man. We'll be looking out for you. You can always come back here, man, hang out with us whenever you want to, and kick it with us. But as you see, we keep it loose. We keep it strong, and we're here, man. We'll be looking out for you and paying attention as you move along.
Most definitely. I want to say thank you for this opportunity. Thank you. I have fun. And it's great times.
All right. Hope we'll catch up with you soon.
Let's go.
Thank you so much.
Let's go.
Right,
CIAA. Let's go, man. Let's go, bro. CIAA. Let's go.
Enjoy the process.
Thank you. You guys have a great night.
You do the same. Appreciate it.
All right, man. Welcome back to the Ghost Squad Sports Radio Podcast with Ice, Water, Black Thor, and Puma. We just talked to Donald Boone. I'm very impressed with this young man. Brother is CFB Network, All-American, had
earn all these awards. He's one of 9 CIAA players in this draft that people are looking at seriously. And I'm kind of rooting for the CIAA because what you mentioned, what he mentioned earlier, coming from a small school, a lot of people don't realize that there are a lot of gems in the CIAA. And with all these awards and accolades, Black, I'm pretty sure the NFL is keeping a close watch on this guy.
I'm sure, man. Quietly, I'm sure they are, because they don't want to make too much noise for some, I'm sure, for other teams to pay attention to. But like you said, when you look at his bio, bro, I mean, you go from top to bottom. This cat has been getting it done. And he comes from good stock, bro. He comes from good stock, and he's been around some good people in the past. Like you mentioned, Billy White Hughes Johnson. So he's prepared. He's prepared. He's ready. I like that fact when he said he plays aggressive. He has that edge to him, because you need some dirtiness. You need that dog. So, yes, he's ready, man. Mentally and physically, this cat's ready to step in there. And once he steps on that field, they're going to be impressed, I'm sure.
All right, so you brought out some awards that he won over the years. What's most impressive about this list that he's amassed over the past few years in his college career?
I think you can look at awards. I'm more about consistency, man, and the fact that he continued to receive awards because he was dominant. That goes a long way.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about going to another level. I mean, some people might say, well, you get those awards because the level you play, you can play against the big teams. But when you're consistent like that, and then the factor that he was afraid, he would say, like, sometimes you just got to be you got to be a big nasty. You got to be nasty, man. You can't have friends like, oh, well, okay, I went to this school, whatever. No, he just sounds like he's intrigued. He was so excited. He got so hyped up, he couldn't even talk. He couldn't even tell you, like, I'm
ready to hit
man.
Somebody.
Yeah.
I like that. Ready to hit somebody. Get up, hit somebody.
You need that motivation. So, yeah, I was impressed by just his consistency, but more or less just his. You got that height. You can't teach somebody how to be a DAWG, man. Can't teach dog, bro. It's not possible. Can't teach it.
All right.
Yeah, that nasty
takes
a long way.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Please go ahead, bro. No, I was going to say, that nasty in that position is going to take you a long way, bro. That takes you a long way in that position. Yes.
I thought that was a great question, Black, when you asked him about the defense. We all know how nasty defensive linemen could be, but I don't think people realize how diabolical and vicious offensive linemen could be.
Yeah.
Because they got to come up with tactics. to block the quarterback, and I know some offensive linemen in my day, and they are not. You wonder why defensive linemen don't fight offensive linemen too often, because those guys are diabolical, nasty, and
yes,
somewhere
sir.
Along the line they're gonna get to you. But yes. I'm just so happy mm-hmm. for him because you know, we don't get that chance. I know I didn't get the chance, and we all dreamt about playing in the NFL. We watched the NFL. We love it, and this young man is one step away from getting called and getting up to the higher ranks. So I'm happy for him, and I wish him the best of luck, and I hope we can talk to him soon when he becomes big time. We'll shout him out if nobody else does. But Black, I didn't get you to talk about some of the draft, some of the other players in the draft, and what you're expecting tomorrow from the NFL as far as the presentation and some of the moves that the teams are going to make.
I think that I think there's going to be a move and run on trying to get some mobile quarterbacks. I really anticipate. I think that's going to take place. I think some of these receivers, you know, the ones at Alabama, Oklahoma, LSU, I think they're going to go a little higher than what a lot of these mock drafters are saying. I think they've got a lot of offensive linemen and defensive tackles and cornerbacks ahead of them. But I think offense, because if you look in now, I mean, you look at the Super Bowl winner, you look at what Baltimore is doing, you have to have a powerful offense now in this league, and a mobile quarterback can get out there and do some things. And I think they set the tone for what you're going to see is going to take place in the next upcoming days with the draft. So I think we're going to see more mobile quarterbacks and these receivers that can get down the field. I think they're going to be early out and early off the board come tomorrow evening.
One interesting thing when you mentioned about mobile quarterbacks, and I want to get both of your comments on this.
one of the reasons why, I think I was reading an article or watching a documentary, it made me start thinking about this. The reason why I don't think a lot of, it could be race, and we're not going to go into that, but a reason why a lot of folks didn't want mobile quarterbacks, especially black quarterbacks, is because when they decide to run or move or get out the pocket, there's really no defense that can stop them. And so for a defense coordinator, that's like your worst nightmare. You look at Mahomes and Jackson, and to me, Tua is better than Barr. But if he didn't get injured, I think he would be going higher than any quarterback because his passes are so accurate. He's able to move with the football. And one of the things that Coach Saban, I heard him in an interview say, is that he needs to know when to give up on the play and run out of bounds and not take the hit. Because usually most of the time when Tua got hurt, it was after the play was done and he's taking a hit. And he can't do that in the NFL. And he said, you know, he's confident that a coach will get to him and say, this is what you need to do. We have another play. Don't get hurt. You know, there's a premium on quarterbacks in the league. But, Ice, what do you think about that? Maybe quarterbacks, especially black quarterbacks, weren't really something that teams were trying to get or people were talking against because they didn't want to defend them. Because there is no defense for a quarterback that can move.
I'm with that. But I think the one thing that they tried to always say is the factor that decision-making, too. Because they were quick to point out many people that all they could do is run. As soon as they see an apparent a sign of danger, they run. But then when you start to see that when you continue to build the offense around these type of mobile quarterbacks, and that it works well. That's why you saw Lamar Jackson took him a year or two to get it together. The same thing, too, with Mahomes out in Kansas City. You have to alter your offense to provide them what they need, and then you have to continue to build up on them as players and as guys that run the offense. You do that for any other player. If you know a player outside that's not African-American or not mobile that cannot run, he's limited in his capacity to move, then you change it up to make sure that he's safe. You bring in bigger offensive linemen, you may change it all the way around the board. Well, because of these mobile quarterbacks, you just want to say they just runners and basically saying they shouldn't be quarterbacks. And I think that's a bad strategy to have.
Yeah, because black, we always heard about the quarterbacks. Oh, they got to stay in the pocket. They got to throw a ball. And especially for black quarterbacks or mobile quarterbacks, you're taking away half the game where they can scramble around for some more time or get receivers open by them moving and getting a few more seconds to get the ball off. Your thoughts on it? Could it be that defenses did not want these quarterbacks there because it was harder for them to defend?
I think that's part of it. But I think what they were looking at, too, when they looked at the percentages, the drop-back quarterback at the time was with the higher passer percentage, was complete more passes downfield. So they were kind of – I mean, NFL is like a, you know, follow-me league. If you're doing something successful, we're going to follow what you do until it's proven that it doesn't work anymore. So when you had these quarterbacks like a Peyton Manning that stood there that really couldn't move but could get the ball down the field and see what's going on, you was trying to find the next Peyton Manning or something close to it. And some of these quarterbacks that was coming out of the league, the black quarterback, they didn't represent that. I go back to the quarterback went to Alcorn State. I can't think of his name right now. The brother that played for the Tennessee Titans. It's funny because he was a – yes. I remember when he came out, Eric McNair, I mean, you think about it, he did this a while ago in a sense, but we kind of went away from – we don't talk about much, but he was doing this long before the quarterbacks we're looking at now. And sometimes we don't think about it, but he was getting it done, bro. Sometimes his pass percentage wasn't that high, but he moved around the pocket. He ran if he had to, and he got it done. I look at Tua. I'm going to jump in real quick because I was listening to Warren Moon talk about him one day this week, and he made a very good point. And it almost kind of aligns with what Saban said, is that Tua has to find a way that every player is not going to be a touchdown. He got to realize basically that you can't outrun these guys. He's not that fast, so he cannot outrun them. He has to find a way to basically, if it's not there, get rid of it. And I think if he does that, he's going to last in the NFL. If he doesn't, he's going to have trouble. But I think it's this. I think it's a wave now, and the person that really kind of basically made this happen and kind of forced it. I mean, don't get me wrong. Andy Reid saw something in Pat Mahomes, and I'm gonna give him a nod for that. But the general manager Ozzie Newsome when you think about Ozzie Newsome, man, basically moving up into the first round to get Lamar Jackson, when no one, when a lot of these other GMs, these mock drafters did not really have him high on their radar, that he moved up to get this cat. And not only that, the organization embraced the type of quarterback he was, because you went from Joe Flacco to a stand-up candlestick in a pocket to Lamar Jackson, and they embraced what he had, what he does, his strength, and they molded, literally molded their offense around his skill set. And look how it's paying off. And so I always said that if you're going to bring a quarterback in such as him, and it worked even Kaepernick, when you think about Kaepernick was under the head coach in San Francisco, they molded around him. You cannot bring a cat in such like Kaepernick, Lamar Jackson, and try to run your typical offense. You have to be ready and willing to mold your offense around your quarterback skills. When you do that, it works. When you don't, you try to make them be something they're not. That's when you have problems. And that's what happened in the NFL for years when they brought in the black quarterbacks. They would try to make him fit what they were trying to do instead of being smart enough and intelligent enough to realize, no, let's mold our offense around their strength, and look what happens.
I was listening to an interview with Warren Moon, and he said he knew that if he ran a great 40 time, that they would try to put him at a receiver or running back. So he deliberately ran slower so that they wouldn't even approach him to do that. And the catchphrase for a black quarterback is the dual threat that can run and pass, but it's almost like a kind of a negative to put that label on them, because now it says that he's not that good of a passer, so he's going to try to make plays with his feet. And also what Ice said earlier about not having the intelligence to play that position. But if you ever get a chance, watch I think the Undefeated did a show on the evolution of black quarterback. It was a really great show. It gave us an insight into the evolution of the black quarterback. And one of the things I think I mentioned last week is that they were saying that the final piece to the evolution is to have black backups, because usually the backup quarterbacks tend to go on to be the offensive coordinators, different coordinators on the offense, and also head coaches. And so once you start seeing that, you may see an influx of black coaches in the NFL. Black, agree, disagree?
No, I agree with that, man. But I'll say this too, man. And I'm happy when I look at Tampa Bay that, I don't know why all these names are escaping me tonight. The offensive coordinator and offensive coordinator that has Kansas City, but the quarterback, that offensive coordinator that Tampa Bay have, that he's there. Because realistically, I think, there's another side of this that I don't think we talk about because we focus on him not being there. A lot of ex-black players don't want to be offensive coordinators. They don't want to be those roles, bro. They want to move on to life, and they got to realize that, sometimes you got to come back and give something else to the game because what the game has given you. So you think about it, and I'm not saying there's been great opportunities for him, but a lot of them kind of tend to walk away and just kind of leave, instead of opposed trying to put themselves in a position to be in that position to be the next black head coach. And I think that we need to see more of that, man, more players, because I'm in a league that's predominantly black. There's no way these players, when they leave or they can't play anymore, they should not think about coaching and signing up with a team and doing what they can. But a lot of them, because it's not a glamorous job, coaching is not glamorous, bro. It just isn't. I mean, some of these guys, they're boring to do it, and they want to do it all day. Because it's not glamorous and sexy, a lot of these players choose not to put themselves in that position to get their work done. And that needs to change as well.
All right, so I'm going to give you the last word on this before we move on to Cam Newton and Javion Clowney and Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's funny when they say that, though, too, about the backup quarterbacks. But you see guys that they give a lot of love to that were great backups after they were starters, and one of the first ones that comes to mind for me is Randall Cunningham. Randall Cunningham was a great backup. In fact, he enjoyed that often because he wasn't going to get his head knocked off or anything like that too. But when you are at that point of being an assistant coach, you really get a chance to learn the game. You look at Eric Bieniemy
even though he's like the offensive coordinator, he understands what's going on. And they can try to say that, well, he may not be the guy. They could Mahomes could have done that without him. But the point is, he didn't. He did it with him and the other players too. So overall, I think it's great to move forward. I do agree with what Black Thor said, that a lot of guys, it's not a very glamorous position to sit back and wait. But the point of it comes down to it is, if these players do get opportunities, like you look at the coach down in Miami, you look at the coach over in with the Chargers, when they get these, when they receive these opportunities, they have to produce, because they know everybody's watching. You don't get a second chance. You don't get a chance to get extra 3 years on your contract because people like you. And I think there's a lot of pressure there. And unfortunately, it's not fair. But when they get in there, they just have to push forward and make it work.
Yeah, because I look at the NBA, they had the, you know, a lot of the Black coaches that were successful in the league, they weren't like the star standouts. You know, they weren't the Russells and the Chamberlains and the Magic Johnson and all that. They were players that were role players or decent players or really good players that stepped into the assistant coaches and things of that sort. You look at Doc Rivers, you look at Bernie Becker's staff, you look at Lenny Wilkins, I think, was a great player, but he was a greater coach. But you look at these Black coaches, and they weren't Casey Jones, who played on the Boston Celtics team. They weren't the marquee players, but they hung around just enough, learned the game just enough, got into the system, and then became head coaches. Javion Clowney, we talked about him a couple of weeks ago, and it seems like he may be making his way back to Seattle and realize that he has to eat a lot of humble pie because he's not going to get paid what he thought he was going to get paid. What are your thoughts about Javion Clowney?
Yeah, one is a tough year. It really is with all this going on. And I think a team like Cleveland really was prepared to pull the trigger. But when you look up and with all these delays, then here's the draft. And now they're like, well, yeah, we wanted him, but now we might as well wait. So when they wait, it's costing Clowney more money. And also they said that Tennessee might still be interested. So it might not just be straight Seattle. And granted, it might be a little less money, but if he signs a one-year deal and his pay dirt, then he could sign down the line for a larger contract. So tough right now. It's not fair. He's probably thinking that way, but it's all about production. But there's still, I think, like at least three teams that are still in need of the services. It's just more or less them working together and having an opportunity to show what he can do. More or less, I think he would probably prefer to play for a team that he thinks is going to be a contender for the postseason.
Yeah, Black, I got a feeling that after tomorrow night, Clowney's going to know exactly where he stands with some of these teams based on some of the picks that some of these teams and trying to fill up holes in their team on the rosters. What do you think about Javion Clowney?
I didn't think Cleveland was serious about him. I know Ice is closer to it, so I respect what he's saying, but I just thought Cleveland was just putting their name in a hat to get attention, bro. Because if you want him, go get him. He's out there. Don't play around and all this stuff. You know what he can do. Go get him. I don't think there's really a role for him other than Seattle. And I thought that from the beginning. I thought he went out there. His price tag was way too high. And I don't think the league is up on him. I think he needs two good years, dominant years in Seattle. Take a two-year contract. Don't only do a one-year. Take a two-year contract and play as much as you can, bro. Play hurt and ball out. You'll get your money, bro, and ball out. But he needs 2 years of consistency. He hasn't shown it to us yet. And I like Clowney. I do. But the knocking him out of college was he takes plays off. He plays when he wants to play. And you saw some of that when he was a Texans uniform. And not saying he had a lot of that in Seattle, but that's still the knock on him. So I think a lot of teams may flirt and throw their names out there, act like they're interested. If you want to go get him, and I don't think Cleveland was serious about it. Seattle's willing to give him a home. They may not pay him what he think he's worth, but at the same time, bro, you can go out there and make yourself profitable by dealing and getting it done in Seattle and go elsewhere. You can.
Yeah. Next story is Cam Newton maybe going to Jacksonville. I think Fournette started that rumor, but he may be on the trading block, and I think Fournette kind of shot himself in the foot. Fournette was one of my favorite college players coming out of LSU, but it just seemed like he just couldn't stay on the field. And he had an incident last season where he got into it with somebody on the field, and he just hasn't been consistent. So I know that I know me and Ice had talked about this, Black, maybe last week about where he could go, places like Chicago, folks that really need a running back and could give them at least eight to ten games a season. What are your thoughts about Leonard Fournette on the trading block in Jacksonville? It seems like they had enough of him. And Cam Newton being in Jacksonville.
I don't think Cam is going to go there. Excuse me. I think Jacksonville set with the quarterback they have, bro. I don't think they're going to bring anybody in that's going to rock him. He made some mistakes throughout the year, the guy that played, but they love that mustache. The fans down there are crazy about him. I think they're going to give him every opportunity to have that job. And if you bring Cam Newton in, you're not giving him a chance. I don't think it's going to happen. They may draft another quarterback or may pick up a quarterback late on just to have somebody behind him, but they don't want Cam. Fournette has to be, it's going to be interesting because, to me, the problem with him is, you know, he runs his mouth a little bit. He's not on the field all the time. But one thing that I think is going to hurt him in the long run, a lot of these running backs now are forced to catch the ball. And he's not real good at that, man. He's not good coming out of that backfield, putting the rock under his arm, catching it, and doing something with it. And he has to be able to develop that in his game and really personify it. And I think that hurts him more than anything else, man, because that downhill punch and running, there's only so many teams running like that, bro. There's only so many. Rest of them want to spread the field, dump it to the running back, and you go pick up 5-10 yards after you catch the ball. And that's not Fournette's game. So if he doesn't stay in Jacksonville, I you know, it's got to be a team that's willing to pound the ball. Buffalo comes to mind. I'm not sure if they can use him. But a team such as that that doesn't mind having a running back that you're going to give it to him and feature it, he might end up in Washington for that matter because they have the old running back there. They might push out the way and grab him there. So
Peterson.
I see him going there. But,
yeah. Yes,
Peterson might move up. He said he wants to play to 44 or 45. Peterson, put the drugs away, bro. Ain't happening. He can go here and play. But outside of that, man, it's not going to be a lot of teams that's going to take him in because don't get me wrong, man, there's a slew of good running backs coming this draft, coming the next few days, bro. A slew of good running backs, man. A slew. So he's up against that, bro. So if they decide to move him, I don't know if it's going to be a good market out there for him. I'm not sure if they're going to release him, what the salary cap hit would be for him, but his days in Jacksonville are probably definitely numbered.
I think last week you made a great comment that he might end up with the Bears because they need a running game bad to kind of disguise the quarterback a little bit and have some type of offense. And Chicago is known as a team that really kind of goes to run first and pass second. But what do you think about Fournette? Might be on the trading block, teams that might want him, and Cam Newton in Jacksonville. I don't know. It may work for him because, you know, I know the governor's not too smart in Florida, but, you know, it may work for him.
Yeah, when you look at Fournette, though, granted, his game has changed. They were all excited about him early on because everything seemed to be going in the right direction. And then a lot of things started to transpire with player defections, a lot of injuries. But he was expected to be the cowbell, to ring that cowbell every week. This guy is supposed to get 100 yards every week, even though the things around him were falling off. Not an excuse for him, because there are times that he really could have been better, I think, and he wasn't. But I think that plays in the psyche when you're losing and a lot of stuff, too. But in the regards to where he could go elsewhere, I think Chicago would be, if they keep moving forward, that would be kind of ideal for him, because they like to play that where the type of offense where they have been recently, where they like to have maybe a pass catcher in the backfield, and they like to split time, and then you put the bruiser, the runner in there, the guy who does that, and then they kind of switch them, alternate them a little bit. Not sure that's the best way to do it, but it would save him some wear and tear, and he wouldn't have to worry about somebody coming after him or talking crazy. Another team, too, that if he wanted to get healthy and really wants to play, I think Miami would be ideal. I know they had picked up I think they picked up Jordan Howard, but they're trying to stockpile talent at certain positions, and that might not be a bad idea, particularly with they're on their way trying to move up. So I can see a team like that working that way for him and he could help them as well. Cam Newton, I just don't see Jacksonville either because two things. He's going to want to do things a certain way, and they're just not in that position. I'm not sure if they have the talent, and I'm not sure if they really want to have some older, angry veteran on the bench talking about why they should be doing something different. He can't believe he's here, and they don't need that. So I can see Jacksonville possibly bringing in somebody like Andy Dalton. That's a lot of talk about that. Twofold because the old offensive coordinator at Cincinnati is down in Jacksonville, and then they picked up the tight end, Eifert from Cincinnati. They signed him, and Andy Dalton at the right time would not cost a lot of money, and he's not going to cause any issues. So I think Cam is going to have to buy this time and not be on his timetable. But after the draft, things are going to start opening up. Injuries happen, and then when teams start losing a couple games, they kind of get desperate. And he may not want to play hero ball, but he might. His phone is going to ring at some point. The question is he going to answer and be okay to go wherever the teams that are they're asking? Because it may not be pretty. He may not be getting that call from Kansas City to back up Mahomes, not like that. So he might have to, kind of swallow his pride and do some things. Depends on how bad he really wants to play.
All right. I'm going to let Black stew on this for a while. So I know he's going to crack up when I bring in the next story. I'm going to stay with Ice with this one. The ex-commissioner Luck is suing the XFL. He's suing Vince McMahon. You heard about this story, and give me your take on why this man is suing the XFL. Because I said last week it's done for the XFL. I don't think McMahon's going to come back and try to do football anymore. But this seems like it's the nail in the coffin for the XFL and Vince McMahon being in football, unless he buys part ownership in the NFL.
Is that me or Black?
Ice, yeah, because I'm going to let Black stew on this for a little while because he's a fan of the WWEF or whatever it is now.
It is. I mean, when you look at it from the standpoint of I think he's just trying to say, hey, I gave up a lot to try to get this, take this over, and I should receive some compensation. And maybe Vince McMahon is like, dude, do you see what just happened? I said I wasn't going to do that ever again right when I get ready to do it. Look at this BS. I know that's out of everybody's control, but he's like, man, I had all the sponsors. We were making a little headway. We had some better talent, and it just went straight to hell. So he like, you know what? I'm done. I'm not paying anybody. You can sign for unemployment. I don't care who you
are. They're bankrupt, right?
Well, that's what he said. I think they're close. And it's like, look, that's what you do. That was out of his control. So at that point, you go, hey, I tried it. I had good intentions. I had everything lined up. And then a virus came. It's like, really? And then sometimes the writing is on the wall. You have to go, mate, yo, man, this is not for me. I'm not supposed to be here.
A sign from the heavens.
It's kind of like, yeah. You're like, look. Maybe this is not for me. Maybe I do something else. I want to watch football. I'll go watch a high school football sponsored team. Something like that. I'll go watch them on Friday night. So I'm a part of it. But in regards to big time football, yeah, it might be a wrap for him. But Mr. Luck, I'm not mad at you. You want a little change. All you can do is try, and we'll let the courts figure it out. If it works, great. If you don't get anything, then no harm, no foul. But I would at least try because there's a lot that he had writing and being part of that.
So I back in the day when I was stealing Matchbox cars from Black, and we would be wrestling all the time. He was Haystack Calhoun, I was Mill Mascaris or whoever, whatever. And it wasn't fair because he outweighed me. And Vince McMahon was like the towering guy that we used to look up to every Saturday and watch wrestling. Black, I know you got a chuckle when you heard this. What are your thoughts about this?
You know, you said something a little while ago before we went to ice, and you said that he's not going to be able to buy an NFL franchise. And that's where this league kind of really got started. He wanted to join the NFL Boys Club, and they told him, no, So in spite, despite them, he kind of said, I'll start my own league. Now, this Oliver North, whoever he is, whatever this cat is, bro, understand the league, he owes you nothing, bro. You bought the hype that this is going to be better than what it was. I don't even care if the corona didn't start. It wasn't going to work, bro. The corona didn't kill that league. Talent killed that league. Non-viewership killed that league, bro. Get real. It wasn't going to make it. The NFL, you could love or hate the NFL. The NFL is entrenched, bro. It's entrenched. It's been around for years. Don't try to come up against them and play up. You can't. That's just like right now, Jerry Jones buying a wrestling franchise and try to go against it. They've been around doing it for a long time, bro. It's going to be tough to come in and go up against it. It just is. No matter how you try, no matter how you think, it may sound good. You can pull all the old players in, whatever you want to do. It's going to be short-lived. We've seen that with two leagues, bro, in the past year. So him to think that he's owed something, good luck with that, bro. Good luck, because they're back to basically wrestling. They can care less about football. Care less. So if you bought the hype, you know, you jumped in and thought it's going to be around and you're going to be, you know, battling and making a lot of money, yeah, good luck with that one because you didn't get it, man. So I don't see you have a legal leg to stand on. You know, you should enjoy the ride while I was there and keep it moving. It's over. It is absolutely over. NFL, I said this a few weeks ago. Everybody's running around. They're not doing this. NFL's like, look, we're starting our season on time. They don't care if nobody's sitting in the stands. They're playing. They don't care if the football players wearing masks. Guess what? Come September, think about they're playing football. They're going to be out there. They don't care. It's a money-making machine. Adam Schefter was crying like a baby a month ago trying to get general managers not to show up. And I got to believe at some point, I could be wrong, you're going to see Adam Schefter go away. You're going to see him somehow just kind of go away. Just keep an eye on that. You're going to see him just kind of dissipate and just leave because he was going too hard against the NFL. And Roger Dell came out and told the general manager, shut your mouth. Basically, shut up. We're doing this. Either you're with us or you're not. And he was trying too hard, in my opinion, trying to get them to stop. And I just think there's a price to pay for that. This is business, bro. It's a big money machine. Keep an eye out for it.
Okay. Now I got to get you on this one because you were smoking and drinking the Kool-Aid or Trubisky when I kept telling you that this guy can't play quarterback. Well, there are a number of players that are coming out of the woodwork saying this may be Trubisky's last hurrah with the Bears, and saying that the Bears are really slow walking, trying to buy into this 5th-year option on him. And they brought in a Super Bowl winning quarterback. I knew when they brought in Nick Foles that Trubisky was not going to be the quarterback of the Bears. But now it seems like the handwriting's on the wall. What are your thoughts about the situation?
I will say this, man. It's going to sound strange to say, but I said this earlier about the black quarterback. And I'm not saying he probably would have excelled. He may or may not. They never molded around what he can do. I'm not saying he can do a lot. But this guy can't get out of pocket and throw an accurate pass. And they want him to stay back there and be what he can. That's not his game, bro. They should have knew that when they drafted him. You brought this offensive coordinator from Kansas City, and they try to make him into a quarterback that he's just not doing. Get him out of the edge. Get him on the edges. Get him rolling out. Do the option with him. That's the best you can do with him. That's the best. But they want somebody to stand back there. And I respect them for bringing in the quarterback that they brought in, but he's not what they're trying to make him be. That's not his game, bro. He can't do it. And they've been trying to get him to do it. So I'm not going to say he would have succeeded, but I think his career would have been better and looked better if they were to hear again, play to his strength, and they chose not to. They try to make him do something that he can't do. Like you said early on, he couldn't play on the center. Then why are you putting him under there? Why are you putting him under? If he can't play in the center, why are you putting him under there? Put him in the shotgun. Do your game. But that's where they are. They've always been trying to make him. It's like something like Ralph Cramden might have said a long time ago, trying to put a 5-pound stick of bologna in a 2-pound bag. It don't work, bro. It don't work.
Ice water. Now we were on the show when they drafted Trubisky. I'm not sure if Trubisky goes, the general manager has to go. He has to go because he made a lot of bonehead plays. They don't have a pick until the second round. They had a maneuver to get that. word here in Chicago is that Trubisky is a dead man walking figure of speech in Chicago because the experiment is over. Your thoughts about that?
That might be true, but I'm going to roll with Black Thor just a little bit, about 35% right now. because the problem is they don't have the talent surrounding him to be successful. Tom Brady couldn't help them win in his prime. They don't. That's what nobody's talking about. I mean, they have some decent wide receivers. You saw Miller over there. You know, and you're like, okay, all right. Then they bring in Jimmy Graham? What? I mean, what are you doing? You have to surround your quarterback with some decent talent. And offensively, I don't think they've done that. Doesn't mean Trubisky would have done any better. But at least that way you go, hey, we made some investments on some quality guys. Now, what you going to do? What's going on with you? And I don't think they've done that. I think Foles is going to find that too. But they have to do that, and it's time for him to go. But it was said before, you knew who you were drafting when he came in. And the whole thing of him not having that much time in college as a starter, that always makes me a little nervous. So we'll see what happens and what they do. But if you want something to change, yeah, you can remove him, and that's all well and good. But I guarantee you Nick Foles is going to be like, can I get some dang on help? Y'all go get Fournette since they don't want him. He's going to start recruiting. He'll start recruiting. You want to play up here? Because that's what you have to do. Otherwise, there's not too many people. Really, there's no one that can be successful if they don't have somebody to throw to. Why do you think Joe Burrow basically told Cincinnati, you better find a way to keep A.J. Green? If you want me to come there and not pull a pillow on Manning, you better have somebody I can throw to. Anyway, allegedly.
All right, we're going to take a break. Come back and talk some Major League Baseball ice. Other leagues overseas are playing. Will this put pressure on Major League Baseball over here? We'll talk about that when we get back. Welcome back to the Good Squad Sports Radio Show. If you have some time to love funk music, check out the one right here on Blog Talk Radio. I had the funk doctor up there, Black. Got to get you up there to host a show on the funk, because I know you know a little bit something about the funk. But me and Ice launched the first show of the one last week before 420. I got some positive feedback about that. People really miss and love the funk. Anywho, let's talk some Major League Baseball with the Major League Baseball Report. Ice, I saw this story. One of the stories that also came out today was the Boston Red Sox getting some of their picks suspended because of the scandal, the cheating scandal. But there are some teams in South Korea and other places that are playing without the fans, and they're playing with masks. And I was wondering, does this put a lot more pressure on Major League Baseball right here to get the show going?
No, because America still shut down and quiet as it kept. Did you say China?
I said Korea. South Korea. I think. Yeah, in Japan.
They got the vaccine, bro. They already got the vaccine. So anyway, everyone.
They holding out is what you're saying.
Yeah. We ain't got the vaccine over here. So when we get the vaccine, they maybe. Yeah, no. But no, I just think overall that Major League Baseball. They're trying to put together some possible plans, but you have to just wait and see. So once things open up, you have to be ready. I said that before. I think that what they're looking at right now is maybe having all of the teams play like when a certain area or certain states. Maybe what they're looking at right now, maybe three states, and you break them up, and then maybe have like a hub in Texas or something like that where anyway, if anybody knows of anything, it comes down to this. It's if we're talking about Florida, Texas, maybe in Miami as well, places that literally have roofs on their, you know, on their stadiums. So that way you can close if it's raining and you can get it done. And everybody needs to understand that if they do come back, that it's going to be a shortened season. There's no way, I think, unless they come back May 1st, which is not happening, that you can get 162 games in, which to me will be a great relief for Black Thor. But it also would be more exciting because of the factor that you can have people excited for maybe, let's say it's 80-game season or 62-game season, whatever it is, and then you start the playoffs. They've done it before, and they'll have to do just move on from that standpoint. So I don't know that from that standpoint, that's what they have to do. But the Red Sox, it's like, really? Breaking their hand because they have to do something.
Yeah, but, basically.
People are worried about the season. People not worried about what happened or all. Again, Black Thor, you were right. I'm going to give you this one. I'm going to give you this one. Austin, don't do this, but I'm going to give you this one. And I have feelings on that, too, from the standpoint of nobody care about what these assholes did. Hell, they want to see me. Now you don't
Thank
have to
you.
See
Yes.
You worry about these assholes? Everybody knows what's going on. It's like New England. With the Patriots, with the ball, everybody knew that they were discovering them balls and taking air out the ball. What are you going to say? Oh, you can't win the trophy, so you took the ball that air out the ball. Man, please. Nobody worry about that. You going to take the trophy woman champion? Wasn't nobody hurt? Wasn't nobody murdered? Wasn't nobody beating up no women? Just kind of keeping it real. So everybody be all right. So keep moving on. So you have to put that behind you. I think, again, the whole point of this is having plans in place, so when you get to go ahead, then you're ready to move forward. Instead of trying to plan, it's one of those things where they tell you before that you shouldn't plan as if you're trying to get – you shouldn't get ready to plan. You should already be planning. So when the opportunity comes, you can move forward.
Can I jump in real quick, Boone, if you don't mind?
Go ahead.
I'm going to say this, man. Major League Baseball is blowing a great opportunity here, bro. They're blowing a great opportunity here. Seriously, man. This is the one sport that you could put masks on the players. They're kind of separated by 6 feet, whatever the case may be. Other than the batter and the catcher and the umpire, everybody's kind of spread apart, bro. They should be seizing the moment, getting out front, and playing some live sports for anybody else to play, bro. I'm sorry. They got to find a way to get it done. They will have the whole sports world to themselves. They would have it. People are now craving for sports so bad, they would have it. Beer sales will go through the roof. Hot dog sales will go through the roof. And they letting it go by. I'm sorry, I know there's a pandemic, but damn it, take your chances. You got to get out there. You got to give a date real soon. Make it happen. I don't care if you just find three cities, and play every game in those cities, bro. You got to do a fine estate that has not been hit that hard. There's plenty of states in this country that has not been hit that hard by the coronavirus. Get your butt over there and start playing baseball. What are you waiting on? You're sitting around giving out punishment for something that people don't even care about? You are suspending a player that can't even coach you. That's not even playing. What difference does it make? I am shocked. The NFL is controlling the narrative, and you're allowing them to do it. Right now, you should be kicking dirt in the NFL. Dirt. You should have been playing something or doing something tomorrow night while the draft is going on. Something should be happening tomorrow. I'm talking about baseball. But they're sitting around with their hand up their nose, not knowing what to do. This is your time of the season. I'm here to tell you, if the NFL gets a chance to practice in August and July, it's all over. I don't care if baseball's playing, but it's all over, bro. It's over. They need to get out now and get in front of this. And they're letting a great opportunity go by. Great opportunity, man. They need to get out there. Stop playing. Put masks. These players are making $1 million a year. You got some of the best doctors in the country. Put them on there. Wipe everything down. Every time they come off the field, spray them if you got it. I don't care. Stop playing.
Hey, Puma. Can
yeah,
because
they were talking about playing in Arizona. Yeah, yeah.
Right. Can I say one thing? Black Thor, are you secretly the governor of Georgia?
No.
I'm here to tell you, man. I don't mean to get political, but I saw on the television that Las Vegas is opening up, bro. It's coming back. Whether people like it or not, and I understand, you saw they did in Florida over the weekend, people are ready to get out of the houses, bro. If they're ready to get out, they're ready for the summertime, they're ready for springtime. Either you take advantage or you're going to get done up in the sand. It's one of the two. And I'm not saying it's the right thing to do, but business ain't never been right in this country, bro. They brought us over here on ships. And you can't play a damn baseball game with a mask on your face? Come on, man. Come on. What are we doing? I hate to say this, but as a country, we've gotten too sissified in this country. Just my opinion. That's Black Thor, baby.
The governor of Georgia. Yeah, because I thought they were talking about playing in Arizona. And the Arizona governor was like, yeah, you know, we can have the league and we'll split them up this way. And then stories come out like that, and then it goes away. Plans come up, and then it goes away. And so I think everybody's just kind of sitting around waiting what's going on. But I think part of it is they got a vaccine. And you said South Korea and Japan probably got a vaccine. So if any of their players get sick, so that's an investment. That's property for them. So maybe they can give them a vaccine if they get sick. But we have nothing over here. So I don't know. It's quite interesting. I said this a couple of weeks ago, and I'll keep saying it until they prove me wrong. I don't think we're going to have sports this year. I really don't. I don't think sports are going to happen this year.
Football,
I think it's
baby.
A wash for this whole year.
Football, baby.
I don't even think
football
is going to happen. Because you got Von Miller who just caught the coronavirus.
That's one player,
and
bro.
Look, guess
one
what?
Player.
That's all well and good. Can we say this?
That's
though?
One player.
He just called the virus, but the draft is happening tomorrow. Hell, Roger Goodell get it tomorrow, and they still run with that draft, bro.
NFL playing, bro. September they are gonna be playing football. Fantasy, they're gonna start doing fantasy football drafts in about a month. I'm telling you now, bro. They play football, bro. Playing football. They got TV contracts coming up soon. They ain't missing that money. They playing football. I'm serious. If you want to pay me $10 million to go out there and play a game I love, I'm putting a mask on. I'm putting it on, bro.
It's the reason why Roger Goodell is hosting the draft from his basement, bro.
Thank you.
From his basement.
Yeah.
They playing. NFL commissioner.
Thank you. They're playing. They ain't playing. They are playing. Trust me. NFL is going to be playing in September. Get your shots. But they're playing, bro.
And you better buy them reduced jerseys now. You better buy them reduced jerseys when the season starts.
I don't want them jerseys. I don't want those jerseys. We talked about that in the first 40, ladies and gentlemen. Why the NFL has changed. Black came up with a question, why the NFL has changed all these jerseys. Those jerseys suck. The colors suck, the blocking, they just suck, man. Just go back to the regular jersey. They're going to do that anyway because they do the throwback jerseys. They're going to do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And for the record, the Pittsburgh Steelers have the worst throwback jerseys ever. It looks like bumblebees out there. Don't go back to the 70s. Don't go back to the 20s. Go back to the 70s. It looks like a bunch of bumblebees. But anyway. Let's get some NBA basketball, man. It's been this fight between Draymond Green and KD, Ice, and it's becoming ridiculous now. And they keep kind of putting it's like icing on this story about, you know, KD should have told them that he was about to leave and his feelings are hurt and things of that sort. And the more I keep hearing about Kevin Durant, the more I'm starting to – my meter is starting to go towards Black about how he felt about Kevin Durant. And now I'm starting to feel the same way about Kevin. I know. He's been right all damn show. Both shows he's been right. Anyway, that's why I'm going to you first, Ice. Brother, I'm counting on you to tell me the truth. What's the thing going on with Draymond and KD?
Well, you know, there are certain things that you can't,
Black Thor, you can't win with him. You know, it's like your
no,
dad.
No, you can't.
Dad, you got to try to tell your dad about something, and you know he mad as hell. Can I go to nope.
Nope.
Black Thor's mind made up about Kevin Durant. I don't give a damn. He went over there
and Cal and LeBron.
Yeah, yeah, third thing, third thing. So all I'm saying about this is I don't know what it is. I mean, I know they're bored and they just keep going back and forth. Some things are never going to be resolved, especially not now because there's too much time on their hands. You say something, potato, potato. You know, you can call something totally different. So I think they're going to stick with it and go after it. So, and no matter what, I mean, I'm just saying, I'm not saying Black Thor may be a little right about Kevin Durant being a little bit of a diva. But
I'm going to give it to him.
But
I'm going to give it to him. He is diva.
Let me just say this. It takes two to tango. It does. It takes two to tango. It does. And Draymond Green is not. Draymond Green is feeling some kind of way because he wanted to stay. Can we be real about this? He really wanted him to stay. And then they went into the whole point of now Durant saying, well, you know, they really didn't treat me a certain kind of – look, man, sometimes you have runs and then things – you make great runs, you win championships, it's time to move on. I think they both need to move on. But, I don't know. I personally, I would say, I tell you what, here's what we're going to do. Let's play the Madden Challenge, and then let's play some NBA 2K. And if I beat you, you have to apologize to me in front of everybody. I do something like that. Keep it simple, man. It's not – you can't change it, okay? So why even get caught up in the drama like that? But they love it, and the media sure in hell loves it because they don't have nothing else to talk about right now.
Well, I know one thing Black was right about, and he had me up 4 o'clock in the morning talking about Charles Oakley and Patrick Ewing, which we could talk about later. But maybe if Draymond Green Black would have bought KD a bottle of water or took him out to dinner or something like that, pat him on the ass and say, hey, man, we need you on the team, maybe they still have more on the team. That's what leaders do, right? But what's your thoughts about this, man?
I'm going to go to KD first. I'm going to go to him first. Bro, you won 2 championships. You should care less about what how they treated you. You should care less what they're saying about you. What's ever going on? You have 2 rings now that you didn't have before, bro. 2. That's all that matters. That's what you went there for. You didn't go there to make love to Draymond Green. You went there to get the rings, bro. You got 2. I don't understand it. So, you know, give me my props. If I said this for the longest time, this brother's weak in the ass, and he has some tendencies. He sits around and pout and worry about who's talking on all the time way too much. That's that diva. But I'm going to say this about Draymond Green. And I find this interesting because I'm going to take Draymond Green, I'm going to take Kevin Durant, I'm going to take Stephon Curry, and I'm going to take Thompson. The common denominator with these 4 cats, Curry and Thompson had dads in their lives, bro. You look at Draymond Green, you look at Kevin Durant, there's no dad that I know in Draymond Green's life, and they're bitching and moaning all the time like little girls. And when you have a father in your life, that sets you straight, you don't come out like that, bro. You don't. But when you're raised by a single mom and you get that influence, and I know people may not want to hear it, but I see it in Kevin Durant, and I'm starting to see it more and more in Draymond Green. It's like they got that in them. They can't let it go. The average man argues about something, and the next day it's over. It's done. You move on. You go out, you have a drink. You laugh about it. You don't talk about it years later like it happened 5 minutes ago. And that's where they are, bro. That's the bottom line, in my opinion.
Yeah, I remember I did something on the air, and I called Black, and I'm like, man, I didn't mean that. And you were like, what you doing?
That's how we are. You know what I mean? You don't sit around and pout and hang on to old stuff, old grudges. Oh, he didn't hold my hand. He didn't kiss me. Get out of here with that nonsense, bro. He didn't tell me he was going to leave.
And another thing about Draymond Green, you never get into another man's pocketbook, man, another man's contract. If he wanted to leave, he ain't had to tell you a damn thing, bro. He owed you nothing. He owed maybe the organization what he's going to do. He owed you as a player. You know what? You don't want Flo to Hampton to bring him there. That was your dumbness. So when he decided to leave, he did what he wanted to do. That's it.
So I know me and Ice talked about this last week, but I want you to justify why you said Charles Oakley was right about Patrick Ewing with the Knicks, that Patrick Ewing wasn't the leader that they needed. Because we had, I don't know if you listened to the show last week, we had Smart Ray on, and we were all talking about it, and I didn't agree. We were going back and forth, and then I realized it was 4 o'clock. I should be arguing with you at 4 o'clock in the morning. About the Knicks,
hey,
bro. All things.
It was 5 o'clock my time, so you know that's what we do. So I'll say this. You know, Oakley sometimes speak off the cuff. I think Oakley's in his feelings, and some of it I agree with because I look at it like this: Patrick Ewing doesn't have dog in him; he just doesn't. And for him to be the franchise lead of the New York Knicks, at times he needs to step up. I remember seeing Michael Jordan slam and step over, and Patrick Ewing did nothing, bro. What is that type of message that's sent to the rest of your team? You're the leader. I remember in the series against the Houston Rockets, when you got John Starks out there shooting the ball. No, you walk up to John Starks and say, MFA, you don't shoot another shot unless I give you a wink of an eye. Every ball comes to me. That's your team, bro. That's what you step up. That's how you lead. And like he said, Patrick Ewing basically avoided the press at all costs. So never step up, said the same thing over and over and over again. Shrug his shoulders and keep moving. No, that's not good enough for a leader, bro. That's not. Nobody wanted to call him out. Think about this for a second. Patrick Ewing has no respect among the NBA. None. He has no respect with players right now. He couldn't even get a good damn job in every. Why is that, bro? Because he's never shown himself to be a hardcore leader, true man of men. It comes down to that. Now, I'm not saying the Knicks would have won it, but yes, he could have been a better leader. He could have definitely stood up more and took control of that team, that franchise. The coach going to do so much. Pat Riley drove them hard to get where they were because they weren't that talented. They weren't. To make it where they were, it was a lot of great coaching by Pat Riley. But at some point, Pat had to step up. When Michael Jordan was out that year, it was no reason why the Knicks should have won. They was up 2 games up on the Rockets. 2 games. What was Patrick Ewing? Alonjo was serving him his lunch. His lunch, bro. Where were you? At that, you show nothing. So to a degree, yes, I agree with Oakley to an extent. They needed more from him. They just did. But on the flip side of the coin, that's not Patrick Ewing. He doesn't know how to be a leader. He doesn't know how. The same man you allow to disgrace you, to take you out to Dennis before he came and abuse you in the garden, wouldn't even give you a decent job in Charlotte. Think about that for a second. You think that's respectful? Michael don't respect. No one respects Patrick Ewing. When you talk about the NBA sitters right now, his name doesn't even come up, bro. Think about it. You'll talk about David Robinson before you talk about Patrick Ewing. And that's a disgrace. Seriously. A disgrace because no one respects him as the player and the man that he was. He's doing a hell of a job with Georgetown. I'll give him that. So for that reason, I say, yeah, Oakley had a point. He has a point. Because when you set the tone as a leader who you are, the rest will follow. They should. John Starks didn't want to take those shots. He had another choice. Who else is going to shoot, bro? Patrick Ewing, that's when you step up, bro. You were made to get a championship. And I've been saying that for years. He punked out in that series. Punked out. Ain't nowhere in the world. You let Charles take 4 shots, bro. You stand there looking at, are you out of your effing mind? Come on, bro. Seriously? Mm-mm. You go back in that locker room and you throw a chair, you throw something, you throw a chair in the stands if you got it, damn it. You don't, come on, bro. Where's the leadership? You show me a time he led the Knicks with leadership.
Ice. And we're going to make this quick because I know we're running out of time. I'm going to just say this. Game 7, Houston. 0-for-11, John Starks from three-point line. We talked about this last week. So, granted, you can blame Patrick Ewing for not choking out John Starks and letting you know what's going on. But I'm also looking at Pat Riley. But wait a minute, Oakley, weren't you considered an enforcer?
You mean you couldn't grab Dark? You can grab
9 points a game, 9 rebounds a game, career.
And enforcer. That's what he's known as. So when that man was 0-10 or 1-10, then you should have known right there it's time to pass the ball. Game 7 of the NBA Finals. That's what we're talking about. So from that standpoint, you didn't do anything. Nobody did anything. And just the whole point of, again, 2-17, 0-11 from the three-point line. And then we're talking about, well, you know, Pat didn't say nothing. Well, you didn't say anything either. So I'm not saying Pat was the strongest leader and maybe wasn't a leader at all. But I'll tell you what, I don't give a damn. Puma, when you and I are playing together and we're playing for a championship and Black Thorn, you go 0-6, I'm coming for you, bro. I'm like, you need the best man. You might have an altercation. I'm going to hug you and love you afterwards, but I'm trying to get that ring up the time. Guess what? You can be mad at me all you want to be during the game. You might be in the game, but I'm not going to let you take my job. I'm going to still be in the game. But I'm going to tell you what, Jeff, if you don't pass the ball, well, it's going to be the repercussions. That's how serious that is. Nobody want to talk about that. So, man, you can blame Patrick all you want to. You weren't the only one out there. See, I got the wrong dog.
Nah.
Look, hey, you put Steven Jackson on that squad back in the day, he would have shook some shit up right there.
Yeah, my whole thing is that the Knicks had plenty of opportunities to win championships. They didn't play smart down the stretch. They didn't get the players that they needed to score when they needed to score. It was like, for me, watching the Knicks back in the day, it's like they would go into the fourth quarter with maybe a 10-point lead. And you knew they were going to give it up. You knew they were going to give it up. They were going to do something stupid. They were going to hog the ball. They weren't going to play smart. So they had a lot of opportunities. They could have won against San Antonio. They could have won against Houston. But Michael Jordan was a big reason why they didn't win, because the Bulls were just a better team. They were just a better team. There were times when Jordan wasn't on, the other players would step up. And with the Knicks, there was no other players that could step up, bottom line. And I'm a true Blue Knicks fan. But they would not step up. They would do some bonehead things at the end. It seemed like Pat Riley didn't have a hold on them toward the last 5 minutes of the game. And even if they had a 2-point lead, you knew that they weren't going to come out of that game. Very rarely they're going to come out of that game. So I can't just blame it on Pat. I give it to you that Pat was probably the leader, but he wasn't that leader at Georgetown. But they had, at Georgetown, they had dogs and guys who could step up when Pat wasn't there. And, mentally and physically, and step up. The Bulls did too. You think about with Steph Curry, when things weren't going well with him, with Golden State, there were other players that stepped up. And so, yeah, Patrick Ewing, maybe not the leader that everybody was looking for, but it's still a team sport, and you're all getting paid. So when it's time to step up, everybody stepped up. And I thought it was really ironic, looking at his career numbers, Oakley averaged 9 points and 9 rebounds a game, career. You couldn't step up and be a better shooter. You couldn't step up and do something to make sure the Knicks got to the championship. And I know people say, oh, well, you're getting on Oakley. Yeah, but he's part of that team. He was the enforcer, him and Mason. Where were they in that seventh game when they needed to enforce something and it didn't happen? Not Pat. Pat's been that way all the time. John Thompson used to coming from a different country, John Thompson was like, hey, I'm gonna save the big man for being attacked by the press and all this other stuff. He's been coddled. But, you know, it is what it is. The Knicks had a chance, but they didn't get it done. They just didn't get it done. And that hurts my heart that they didn't. If you want to blame somebody, like we said last week, blame OJ, blame Charles Smith. Don't blame
Patrick. Hey, I just got one thing to say, too. It's not helping that they showing this Jordan, the documentary, because him and Oakley was tight, and then he got traded. He's feeling some kind of way because he didn't get one out of them 6 rings. He's feeling some kind of way. Mike might have just gave him one just out of ceremony reasons, but, yeah, it's hurting him right now. So
traded him for Cartwright.
Yeah, all that hardware, he has zero. Of course he's going to blame somebody. Patrick is an easy target.
All right. We're out of time. We're not going to do last-second shots. But, Black, appreciate you. I don't know if you have to go to work tomorrow, but appreciate you. Great job with the interview. If you missed any part of the show, make sure you catch the interview of Donald Boone. Going to be drafted tomorrow or the next day in the NFL. Very proud of him. We'll keep in contact with him. But we will see you next week. Take care.